Hi, my name is Michael Creamer, and welcome to a podcast that is focused on the world of corporate real estate and everything that touches it. Today, I'm talking to Ralph Aldil, a brand experience specialist, as well as Despina Katsakakis, who's an executive partner, global lead, Total Workplace at Cushman & Wakefield. Welcome to you both, and thanks for joining me. Ralph, before we dig into the property side of this, can you just give maybe a short introduction by what you mean and around the culture of a business and why that is so important?
Hi, Michael. Yes. Culture of a business, I guess the short answer to this one is pretty much the way we do things around here. When you dig into that a little bit deeper, culture usually manifests itself as a core set of beliefs and behaviors that pretty much determine how an organization, as a collection of individuals, but also as a community, respond and react to the challenges of their work. It tends to be articulated in the form of principles, practices, visions, values, goals, and various other statements, but it's really about belief and behavior. And the reason that's so important is that it's that belief and behavior that drives the effort and discretionary performance that can help people and teams and businesses grow. So culture is becoming more and more the driving force of business in the future.
Okay. And maybe just as a follow-on to that, can you describe what you see the difference between brand and culture? Because I think those are maybe two different things and certainly manifest themselves in different ways in the workplace, which is what we want to come on and talk about.
Yeah. Traditionally, brand would have been described as the kind of external perception that we have of an organization, what we think and feel about Coca-Cola or what we think and feel about Apple. And those thoughts and feelings and emotional responses pretty much determine our behavior as consumers. On the inside of organizations, culture has pretty much been the same thing, what employees think and feel about the business they work for and the environment they work in. What's interesting at the moment is that the alignment of brand and culture is becoming more and more important. And so the great customer experiences of the future are going to be principally determined by the quality of the internal experiences that employees have. And so the rise of the employee experience and the importance of re-evaluating and redefining culture is becoming more and more important. And increasingly now, brands are being much more driven by culture than they are even by the kind of external understanding of brand. So culture and brand are almost becoming interchangeable.
Right. And if we take that, Despina, if we take that into the real estate space, and I kind of want to break this down and maybe have a brief conversation, sort of a pre-COVID, because I think there's a real catalyst around COVID and on this topic. But pre-COVID, were companies thinking about brand and culture when they were designing space? And if so, how did that manifest itself in the physical office environment?
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Just to set the scene a little bit and make a connection to what Ralph said, one of the things that I've always tried to say to clients is that your physical space is always embodying your culture and driving and engendering behaviors. And Ralph alluded to that in terms of that cultural experience being part of the space and the behavior. So part of what we've seen in recent years is that organizations have really begun to recognize that they can use space, use the office to drive behaviors, to drive engagement, to engender collaboration and innovation. So we've seen the office adapt in a number of ways to become more social, influenced by the hospitality sector with a focus on amenities and employee experiences. Now, as we look at the office in a post-pandemic world, this will be more important than ever before, as there will be a greater focus on creating an inspiring destination, which really brings to life culture with curated events, learning and development, networking, connecting with colleagues, to reinforce all of these aspects that Ralph described, which, of course, for the most part, are missing from remote working.
The data, I know we've collected a lot of data through the Experience per Square Foot tool. Does any of that touch on the idea of brand and culture? And if so, what is it telling us?
Yes, very, very important point. So our Experience per Square Foot proprietary tool, 3 million data points, are very consistent that the majority of people feel they can effectively focus and collaborate remotely. However, half of employees, one in two, struggle to feel connected with their company's culture and their colleagues during this remote work experience. Now, this flags a significant long-term risk of cultural erosion, which could impact talent retention. I should actually add, Michael, that demographics play a big role in these aspects. And to our surprise, baby boomers adapted the easiest to remote working. But of course, baby boomers would have more cultural capital. And the younger generations are struggling the most with remote work.
I think that's right. So I think what we're seeing is a change over time, which is what makes this kind of very difficult to know exactly what the right answer or set of answers is. But if I flip it back to you, Ralph, and we were talking beforehand, and you stated that, you know, Zoom commoditizes work. So this idea of online meetings and we're commoditizing work. Just can you explain that a little bit more? And do you see that as a, over the long term, a negative thing or a positive thing?
I think something's happened with culture that is just dawning on businesses right now, and it's creating a huge dilemma and a huge opportunity in businesses in a kind of post-COVID reality. And there's a really inconvenient truth about culture, which is that every organization has a culture, good, bad, or indifferent. And every organization has some kind of initiatives or practices or programs or approaches for building and strengthening that culture. But the reality is, since the start of the Industrial Revolution, all corporate culture has been built on one assumption, that you have a captive audience. And that captive audience is the workforce, and they are captivated in the workplace. We have willingly effectively enslaved ourselves in organizational environments and become creatures of habits to them. And for the first time since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution, that hypothesis is no longer true. And so the way that businesses even think about culture and what it means, how you express it, how you curate it and develop it and sustain it, when your primary assumption about culture that you have a captive audience needs to be rethought. And this is not dissimilar to what happened in the world of advertising. For decades, since the 40s and 50s, consumers were treated as captive audiences. We were a target audience. We were captivated. All you needed to do was keep telling us personal wash whiter. And if you told us often enough, we would believe it. And then suddenly that assumption wasn't true anymore, and the whole world of consumer branding had to be reimagined and reinvented. The same thing is happening inside organizations now. And so a lot of the work that I've been doing with leaders is actually helping them, in the first instance, come to terms with the fact that that assumption that everything you thought you knew about culture and every way that you've been developing it, it's built on a hypothesis that is no longer true. You cannot regard your audience anymore as a captive audience. And that changes everything.
Yeah, it certainly does. And Despina, are you seeing that kind of logic and thinking coming out in the conversations you're having with clients around what they do in a, let's call it a post-pandemic world, and this idea of an ecosystem where we will work from multiple places? Dispersed.
Yes, this is a very, very interesting and important challenge, because what we would call in sort of intergenerational transmission of culture from one group to another, the thing that our participants say they really miss the most, tends to happen in the office through being together, sharing work and life experiences that bond people together and create those shared perceptions of what company culture is. So when we are thinking about the future of the workplace, we need to be intentional about our approach that will support people. So on one hand, we want to give people a greater choice and flexibility to choose how, where, and when they work. But we also need to recognize that unless you manage that effectively, then you really have some big downsides on this cultural piece. We're just completing our latest report on the purpose of the office with George Washington University. And we review an interesting case study of how flexibility impacts on connections of colleagues. So if you are going to the office every day, you have an 88% chance of actually running into colleagues that work in the same office with you. But if you reduce that to 2 to 3 days per week, which is actually the sweet spot of working in the office and having flexibility, the chances of two people meeting in the office drops to 19%. So that's about 20 days a year. So if we randomly work remotely, the chances of enjoying that agglomeration effects of working together and building culture are very, very low. So active management is really critical to enjoy these benefits of coming together.
Wow, that's really interesting. And Ralph, back to you. Do you think actively managing culture or actively managing how people work to develop a culture, is that something that you think can happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the what we're seeing at the moment is a kind of almost three-step reaction to what's happened with COVID. I think reaction one in organizations is one of compliance. So we have to be compliant. We have to create a COVID-compliant workplace. And then the next stage is the concern around culture and a lot of the points that Despina has just been making about, you know, how do we keep a culture alive and grow it in this new reality? And one of the concerns I have is that a lot of the methodologies and approaches that organizations are taking is that they're still trying to rebuild culture with the same techniques and approaches that they had when they could assume they had a captive audience. So a really good example of this is what we're going to see right now. Thousands of businesses trying to throw a Christmas party remotely via Zoom, maybe sending us all a little hamper. Now, all that's going to do is remind us how good the old-fashioned Christmas party used to be and how sad work is becoming. And so I think we are beginning a really exciting area of cultural innovation. We have to create new reasons and moments and rituals and occasions that create that attraction value that people want to be together. We can't assume or force them into a physical environment anymore. And so we have to create more attraction value, not only in the places people work, but I actually think in the work itself. So the process of doing work has to become more of an experience rather than just the place of it. And the place of it itself will be for much higher value development agendas, coming together to form teams, have ideas, develop strategy. A lot of the production element of work will become remote and dispersed. So there's two things going on. I think the repurposing of the workplace as a physical environment, but also I think the reimagining of work itself to become more of an experience. It won't be so much where do you work anymore. It'll be how are you working, which will be the stories that we want to talk about. And I think that's a really exciting challenge. And we're already seeing new job titles. It's always a good sign at the end of a transformational year. So there are many businesses now that are creating posts around, you know, international head of remote working. You know, that's now becoming a job for somebody to really focus on the kind of dispersed and remote experience people have and find ways of innovating in that that can recreate and indeed improve on the physical experience.
Right. And so if we just dig a bit deeper into this cultural revolution, if I can call it that, it's starting to happen and could grow. Despina, do you think that the employee will find its own path, meaning they'll come back to the office and when they need to, want to, they'll because of technology, connect with the people they want to see and make sure that they can meet up with them on the same day? Or do you think we need to completely redesign and rethink what the office is for, to Ralph's point and some of the points you've been making, and therefore create the environment to which people go, you know what, I'm going to get out of my house today and go to the office because it's better for me to be there?
So, Michael, I think that space will definitely need to move from a push to a pull approach. It will need to be more intentional and it will need to be more inspiring. But also we will see that teams will be thought of as neighborhoods, both digitally and physically. And so the way people come together will be more intentional. But just to connect with what Ralph was describing, in order to be able to use the workplace more effectively, the workplace of the future will require a broader coalition of leaders partnering across the business with a focus on people and culture. So an intentional set of outcomes of what they're trying to drive in terms of behaviors. And that kind of pushes us to think about real estate in a very different way, because traditional timelines of delivering real estate solutions don't really work in this context. So real estate will need to leverage real-time data to update and iterate the space and experience. So we will be in a significant transition where real estate problems will need to be solved at the pace of business change. So we'll need to adapt a more agile approach to solution, update, and iterate to adjust to experience and behaviors.
And Ralph, I mean, I think Despina is describing a world that we see where we're getting better at collecting data and measuring what's going on inside an office space, and now just talked about adapting quickly to the change in business. Do you see that from a cultural point of view and the conversations you're having with the leaders? How do you kind of demonstrate what you're saying is true, and how do you persuade them that they need to change from presumably something their default position over the last 5, 10, 15 years?
I think one of the things that we've seen that's been an abject lesson through the whole COVID episode is that organizations that lead with action rather than predictions and rhetoric have tended to fare much better. And I think that we've never had more predictions on the future of work or the future of the office or the future of anything right now, as we question whether there's a future at all. And I think that one of the things that I'm quite excited about is that action-led innovation is what we need to see on culture now. People will respond to interventions that are delivered, not predicted. And cultural innovation, we've seen it in the consumer world. This is very, very common. You know, culture, product and service innovation, real-time collaboration with consumers. This is the way modern brands and modern products and services are built. And what we're going to see is that all of that ideology is now going to move inside. So businesses are going to have to become very adept at cultural innovation. They're going to have to be prepared to make mistakes, learn quickly, fail fast, try things and deliver things with their communities of interest, and learn as they go, rather than try and over-research and over-analyze and take too long. Time is really important in this. People's understand cultural resonance and cultural understanding, as this being mentioned, actually can erode very, very quickly when the beliefs you hold about an organization suddenly are called into question, or you don't see evidence of them, or more importantly, experience evidence of them. They can evaporate quite quickly, and so I think we're going to see much more courageous thinking around cultural innovation and delivering experiences that are probably more co-created with employees rather than just projected or promoted to them. And that in itself will create more of a sense of belonging and ownership to the organization, which can be sadly lost as we're spending less time in the workplace.
Ralph, the world of retail is fascinating. We've talked for many years about the retail experience and that being a way in which retailers, particularly the brick retailers, are attracting shoppers to their physical space rather than losing sales online. Do you see any parallels between that and what's going on in the world of work?
I think there's a huge amount we can learn right now from the world of retail, entertainment and hospitality, because fundamentally they're all sectors that have to create a kind of passionate demand from their audiences. In terms of retail, I think one of the most fascinating things right now is how some of the world's biggest brands are starting to realize that instead of building hyper malls and brand centers and flagship stores in city centers, that they are recognizing the need to actually move back out into the community and develop more hyper local strategies. So rather than big kind of temple-esque facilities in city centers, much more agile, smaller hubs in the community for retailing. And it would be fascinating to see how that strategy could morph itself into workplace interventions and more community-focused office space.
Well, Ralph, that really resonates with the data we have in terms of the workplace, the future workplace, because unquestionably people want to have the ability to go to work somewhere near where they live, where they can walk or cycle or short drive even, and be able to have focused space or connect with like-minded people. And we've seen, interestingly, some of our clients that have retail as part of their portfolio, like some of the banks, pivot that those retail locations to turn them into local touchdown community work hubs for their employees that live in those areas. So it is definitely something that will continue to resonate. And we've seen certainly some of the co-working providers also announce that they will be going into smaller communities and suburbs in the US.
Great. Thanks, Despina. I think at this point we'll wrap it up. So really appreciate you both coming on the podcast. I think there's a lot that will continue to change when we think more and more about culture and getting people back into the office. So hopefully we can reconvene in 6 months and see where we've ended up. So Despina and Ralph, thank you both very much for your time.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very much, Michael.